Yes, okay. To begin with, Jim Morrison, and I think Hong Kong Land can certainly keep you rightly proud of what it has achieved for Hong Kong. And that's why I think Hong Kong Land can afford to be humble. So it's just a few. That's what you said really reminds me of what this Roman emperor once said, which is modesty is a virtue, and I have it. which is what we have. And but of course, you know, it links up also with certain things that Eric was saying. And what I found really interesting about Eric saying was the way in which the emphasis now shifts to what he calls thermal competence, that the thermal is a way of reading the city, whereas usually we think about, we see the city, we look at its visual aspects, architecture is a visual thing, or even as something just simply, something spatial. And I think the whole thermal argument, the way in which that becomes a form of control, that you're not necessarily, it's not something that you see, but something that certainly affects you, of course, leads to this other stuff as well, which is like this whole question of the kinds of density we have here. Also said that, you know, air conditioning is what makes hyper-density possible. It's something that's linked up to these different kinds of densities that we've been talking about. Like, for example, we mentioned these two things, like you know, vertical density and its other form, horizontal density. But vertical density, of course, has all these implications. That vertical density is, of course, high capital, high tech, and what it also implies is a form of the necessity for bureaucracy and administration. So all these things are implied. While horizontal ones, if you think about the favelas or shanty towns, would be, of course, low tech, right? Low capital, and absence of administration. But I think if you put these two things together, what we're seeing today also, and something that we might just put on the table, is a third bastard form, you might say, right? Which is sprawl. Because sprawl is at one level sort of you know, it's high tech and it's high capital, but it's not vertical, you know, and we could call this bastard form Kelly fornification. I mean, that's what we have. I mean, I'm living in California now, that's right. I think that might be for another time, but it's like some of the implications of all this would be maybe as follows: that the model that we have in New York and in Hong Kong, if you make that comparison now, is of course it's vertical density, which of course means high capital, high technology, and so on and so forth, and the. And some of the implications of that would be some of the questions that would raise would be this whole question of like what happens to the public realm, how is it disappearing, how can we stop it from disappearing? And maybe I could make a quick comment here, like the way in which we might sort of prevent this from happening is, I think, not just by, shall we say, sentimentalizing the human element. Because here I would remind all of us of a remark that Marx made, which is not necessarily Marxism, but Marx said that human beings make their own history, but not under conditions of their own making. Right? So, I mean, this is something which, in fact, connects up both Jane Jacobs and Robert Moses. It's like these two things that have to be seen together. You make your own history, but not under conditions of your own making. I mean, there's this other history as well that presents constraints. Of course, then this leads to the whole question of sustainability. And I think one of the things that we have to be careful about when we think about that is that we must be careful that the solutions we come up with, are not worse than the problems. That the cure is not worse than the disease. And I think one of the ways in which we can think that is, if you think in ecological terms, is to bear in mind that ecology is not necessarily just green. There are other forms of ecology, or ecology involves many other things, which is also, I think, where we get into some of the things that Brian was, hinting at, you know, kind of ecological resilience and how we can learn from other models other than, for example, the Hong Kong ones or the New York ones. So after Hong Kong is both maybe a time idea, it's also a space idea, after, in the sense of running after something. Okay, I think I've used more to say, but I'm sorry.
I also want to make quick comments.
Very, very brief. Here, basically, in New York, if you applied for a Skybridge here in Manhattan or in any place in New York, we turn you down. I mean, you would not even. It's just a non-starter because we feel that putting in the Skybridge takes away from the life on the street, and it avoids the tough municipal choices about making streets excellent, like your Skybridges are, for pedestrians, but also being able to accommodate bicyclists and cars, buses, trucks, etc., which is really a very tough thing to do. It requires private sector, public sector, working together to actually make the street a well-balanced organ and a prosperous one. So I guess I would want to ask you, if you could talk to Brian about this Bangkok model, would you ever think of turning your shopping inside out and giving it back to the street?
In many ways, that's actually happened with the retailers actually having access from both sides. And one thing I wasn't able to say when I gave my presentation is that we're also looking at the street level. I mean, some of the latter photos that I had of the Landmark complex, everywhere in Central where we can, we're trying to convince adjacent developers, as well as we're taking the lead, we are actually rejuvenating the streetscape of Hong Kong. Trees, new planting, new railings. Because in actual fact, there's still a lot of people at ground in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is so dense that in actual fact, by separating the different strata, you actually get a better flow of people. The other thing we're trying to do in working with, and again, this is our initiative, is we're trying to actually create more drop-offs for taxis and private cars within the Central Business District, because otherwise, it's just gridlock. Hence, again, we actually created our own drop-off near the Landmark, which we got approval for. Yes, I think what you're seeing is the internal malls being externalized in a lot of our buildings for many reasons.
Well, and as a follow-up, just say that we're trying an experiment now in New York and particularly on Broadway, where we're reducing the number of travel lanes and finding that it does not increase gridlock. And in fact, giving over that resultant space to the pedestrian realm, actually making places to sit, even little mini parks in Broadway, in the carriage of Broadway. And I noticed in the photos that the sidewalk would typically seem rather constrained. And wondering if that's that would have to be both a municipal and a private.
Correct. I mean, actually, we've had discussions with the Hong Kong government to what it's called street calming. Mm-hmm. All of Queens Road, just add an extra 2 or 3 meters on either side, and interestingly, other cities in China, like Shanghai, Nanjing Road has already pedestrianized a lot of Nanjing Road, and the historic areas of Nanjing Road are actually thinking of creating street corner. Which again, I think you're right, it's not gonna increase congestion at all. So I think all the cities in Asia are actually, Bangkok, Singapore, Jakarta, all of them are actually doing different things, and I think you'll probably see a lot of new ideas that will move forward and actually help Western cities a lot.
I'll just make one quick comment there as a follow-up, which is this, that giving the streets back to the people, I mean, it's of course a high-sounding idea, but that's not the solution, because there's a problem behind that as well. So which means that this is an idea that we really have to sort of analyze carefully. I mean, it's not what it looks like.
Well, exercising my, as Ronald Reagan said, I paid for this microphone. And I also paid for the drinks outside, and I want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to ask questions. We're not finished quite yet, because I just have a kind of quick question and a summary kind of question to bring it back to the title of today's talk, which was Designing Density Theory and Practice. And I'm going to ask you a quick question while I'm talking, to think about a response. Can you design density? Because in the last 2 days of discussion, we have turned towards the quality of the street, the life of the street. We described today two different kinds of streets, one that's supposed to be the accidental density, the other that's the highly controlled, psychologized use of public space for commercial profit. While I really disagree with Akbar about this notion that there's accidental density that was being presented here, I think that all of this density is economic. There is behind the logic of everything, whether it's gyms, pedestrian bridges in the Prada store, or the subdivision of space piled on top of one another in shopkeepers' interconnection of communal space on the street, economics underlies all that. But if we can see what works in terms of sort of the evident economics on the street of density, can we read in those things a successful pattern that can be replicated? I think Brian, maybe you're saying that people are trying to do that, but they're not succeeding. Is it possible, do you think, to design density in a way that learns from both the developer's goals of using space and the more organic, accrual kind of use of space that you find typical in urban situations?
Yeah, I'd say no. Because because it was self-conscious, and actually my theory is that if the property rights weren't upheld, Hong Kong was ready to bail and go to Bangkok, and so all this development was designed for Hong Kong density, not for Bangkok, and so it was a kind of accident of colonial history, and it certainly this mall was took everyone by surprise, mostly the shopping mall owners and the university, which is benefiting enormously for it, and the Bangkok people themselves. But that's not saying there isn't design there. There's so much design. Siam Paragon brags on its website that it had more architects work on that building than any building in the history of the world.
Any other quick yes or no thoughts?
Say one thing, that if you wanted design density, I mean, government makes huge decisions on this. And if the government doesn't have designers or doesn't engage designers, it's going to have a hard time designing.
I would say one thing about density is, I think it was Professor Chu mentioned it, is the ever-increasing pressure to increase pot ratios. If there was a hint of pot ratios being increased in certain districts just before the handover in 1997, and right now, how do you redevelop 80-year-old buildings in Hong Kong without possibly the potential of an additional plot ratio, which means, we're doing two residential towers right now on Tai Heng Road. They were originally 20-story buildings, and now they're going to be 40-story buildings because they were able to get two extra plot ratios. Exactly. So we are getting more dense in Hong Kong for very commercial reasons. Foreign follows finance, right?
That's
a plug for your book.